Stadium.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Because you never know what he'll ask you to do next.
There's some sort of security blanket that, you know, 7,000 watts of Marshall amplification gives you. And as Nigel says, you know, it's just listen to that sustain. You know. So And so anyway, the first night I came out, halfway through the first number, I realized that I was really enjoying it. And I realized it as soon as I walked out tonight. Tucson came in a day early so I could, just hang out a little bit. Went to a TV station and radio station and, yes, I did. I had a wonderful time. You guys are great here. And, that's who you're watching. This is a story. I'm going to have a fun night, and I really appreciate you coming out, and thank you so much, Tricia. Inspired by a tuning that I stole from George Harrison, and I was lucky enough to be become a friend of his, and we would spend time down at his place in England and jam stuff. And I knew he was an open tuning guy. Is that something that I should feel worried about? The clicking. That's what I'm... Do you hear the clicking?
Yeah, I feel bad about it.
It's all right. I can't concentrate with all that noise in my ears. Is it that? It's the DI line. Does that make it any better for you? Do you understand what that means? But I have to let you know we've sorted it out. I hope. So George, I would go around the music room and just try all his acoustics hanging on the wall, and then I found that tuning that I did wrote When to Change With. So he said, I said, "What's this tuning?" And he said, "That's my tuning, and don't you steal it." And so I stole it, and then went home and quickly wrote Wind of Change. So anyway, I thank George so much, and we miss him dearly. The first song I ever played in public was a Buddy Holly song, Peggy Sue. And I had learned my first song when I was about, I think, 7, was Michael Row the Boat, quickly followed by Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley. And then I thought, enough of this shit. I gotta learn some rock and roll. So Radio Luxembourg we got in London, which was in England, which was sort of an illegal station. But that was from 7 to 11 at night was when we heard American music, which was, because you come here on the BBC. So I would hear Buddy Holly, Eddie Cochran, people like that, Elvis Presley, obviously, and listen to all these guitar players. And so Buddy's song was the very first one that I played. And and then I joined the Cub Scouts. And it was great, actually. And when I joined, all the other Cub Scouts had all these badges down their arms, and I had nothing. And I said, "What's that?" They said, "It's a proficiency badges, which means you have to do well at a certain thing, then they give you a badge." I said, "Okay." "What's an easy one?" They said, "Survival." So they give, what that is in England is the survival. It's very much easier than here. They give you 2 matches. And ask you to go and light a fire. But it's always raining in England, so not only did the matches go out, but the wood was damaged. So I failed that one. And then I went back and I said, "Do you have a music one or anything?" He said, "Yeah, you play guitar, don't you?" I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "Well, bring the guitar, play us a tune, and you'll get a badge." I said, "Oh, good, thank you." So I did, and I got my badge. Then we fast forward many years I got a call from the Buddy Holly Educational Foundation, which is run by Mary Elena, Buddy's widow. And she had all these guitars made to look like, you know, clones of Buddy's, like this one. And she named them all, but for each one of his songs. So guess what? This one's called Peggy Sue. So I lucked out. Originally, it was going to Paul McCartney, but they couldn't get hold of him, apparently. So they gave it to me. The phone does ring occasionally, and I see Paul McCartney come up on my caller ID, and I don't answer it, because I know what he wants. I said, "I'm getting it." Last thing about this, what she did for all these guitars, had the luthier, Buddy changed his frets, and she saved them, and I think there's 20 on this guitar. And so the first 20 guitars I've got made with the names, you probably can't see it, but there's a fret. One of his frets is actually glued inside on the back of the guitar there, inside. And the reason I know it's there is because sometimes I'll just stick my finger in the hole and I'll touch it.
Thank you.
as I can. Here's Peggy's. Say it's about 72, something like that.
Woo! Woo!
Maybe it was 73.
Woo!
I've never had such excitement about a year. But thank you. Anyway, so I finished recording all of, except for one track. I needed one more track for the Franklin's Camel record. And we'd I've been recording that with Eddie Kramer, the engineer, who's famous for Jimi Hendrix's recordings. So he was doing another session, and I wanted to do one more number. And I thought, well, the band's gone home. I'll just do an acoustic something and layer it, put the bass on myself or whatever. And so went into the studio with the assistant engineer, Dave Whitman, I think his name, who ended up doing, I think, Foreigners, all Foreigners stuff later on. Fantastic engineer, great guy. And so we went in about 6 o'clock, and about 4 o'clock I started writing the words. 4 o'clock in the morning, that is. And by 8 o'clock, we were on West 8th Street having eggs for breakfast, so it was an all-nighter, but we had it finished. And so it goes like this. Suddenly, with no warning, it was 4 in the morning. What the papers will say has been printed. I have no reason to want to change the season, 'cause it's just the time of year. Ooh, yeah, just the time of year. Suddenly I'm yawning, maybe 'cause it's 5 in the morning. Sleepless nights I have wasted. You are the reason. Don't talk to me of treason. It's just the time of year. Change the station. but those good moments, and that song is a good moment for me, because it was like I was changed. My life was changing at that point. Relationship changing, ending, and so it was the first big sort of change in my life. So when I sing that one, I feel, you know, I get a good feeling about that. Hope you enjoy it. Anyway, I digress. Another tuning. I don't know what I'm doing till Aidan. That's Aidan Mullen, by the way. Please give him a hand. He has a lot of guitar for him. And so anyway, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to play until he gives me a guitar. So. Thank you. Let's go forwards again to the Frampton record, which was the one where I had the effigy of Steve Marriott on my T-shirt on the front cover. And we finished this, all these last minute things. And Chris Kimsey, the wonderful engineer, went on to do the Stones and you name it. And he did all my early solo records apart from the one with Eddie Kramer. And he said, well, don't you have, we could use an extra few minutes, you know. Do you have anything? I said, well, I have a little thing, ditty of. So this is great. I really appreciate this, and I'm very lucky to have had a friend for about 16 years. We've been writing together, he's one hell of a writer. And you know a lot of his songs that he's written, and he's an amazing guitar player and singer as well. And it's just a thrill to sit next to him and play guitar together. So please give a real big welcome to Mr. Gordon Kennedy. How are you doing, Gordon?
It's very nice. Congratulations on your Cub Scout proficiency. What are you going to do with it?
I steamed it off. The original, because the shirt's about this big. You know? So, like the ones in the 70s. So, I can't get into that outfit anymore. And I think it's in some sort of Hard Rock Cafe somewhere. It's hanging on the wall.
Beautiful for a ham sandwich.
It's going to be one of those nights. we actually could go and talk all night, but we should play something, I think. Yeah? All right. Now, this next one, because it's acoustic and it's acoustic evening, the only electric thing on the stage is the radio, but it doesn't really work. So there is no talk box for this next number. Dang. Okay, get over it. Because you are going to be, with you, like it or not, are going to become the talk box. Now, I know from past that you know the melody of the talk box on this one. It's only slightly humiliating to do this with me, but I will join you so you won't feel left out. And it will happen in places that you least expected. So be ready, okay? I'm serious. I sort of bring it in now. Anyway, so let's see. Should we do this one now then? Okay. One, two, three, four.
Oh,
I thought you were very good on that. One of the loudest talk box vocal audiences you've had. So I appreciate that. This next one, back to New York, actually Long Island, New York. Oh, there's some misfits here. Great Neck, Long Island. I was with them. Great Neck. If you could only drive out there on a Friday night. But, dear friend of mine, Frank Carrillo, who played with me on, acoustic with me on, and electric with me on When You Change and Frampton's Camel. And his parents invited me out. I was writing for the Frampton's Camel album. Invited me out. They threw his brother out of his bedroom so I could sleep in the bed. I said, I'll sleep on the couch. But Andrew, his brother, has never forgiven me. So, but I keep sending him pics. That'll be it. Yeah. I wrote this one there and then tried it out on them the following morning, I think, and it seemed to, that's okay, so they liked it, so I thought, well, I'll try this one on the album, and it's actually the first track we recorded on for Frampton's Camel in the big studio in Electric Lady in New York, and I just went there a couple of weeks ago and just walked around the studio and said, this is where I stood, this is where we mixed the live albums. We did it all there, so it was a great moment. And so this one goes something like this.
Smile.
That's what the lawyers say. never ask a question not knowing what the audience is going to say. Anyway, so, yes. So, the Cincinnati Ballet used about four songs, and I think at least a couple of them were ours, and did a pas de deux, which is a two-person dance, male and female, and they asked me if they could use my music, and I said yes, and so they used the records. And I went away on tour, didn't hear anything about it, and then someone sent me a DVD of this, probably about 15 minutes, and I showed it to Gordon, and we were just jaws dropped. It was unbelievable. And I called them up and thanked them so much. I've never seen such beautiful movement. I've never seen any movement done except me on stage, and which isn't a pretty thing anymore. And so anyway, they invited me down to see a rehearsal workout they were doing for a new show performance, and it just blew me away because there's dancers from all over the world. They're like the best, you know. And they said, we'd like to ask you one other thing. Would you ever think about doing a whole evening of your music? I said, wow, yeah, I'd be honored. You know, I'm thinking they're going to use the CDs. And they said, no. We'd like you to perform with your band live on the stage behind the dancers and do it live. So I said, live on stage behind the dancers. That could be a good deal. 50% of them. And so anyway, they said, we have three acts to a ballet. I'm speaking to it like a, it's like someone who doesn't speak the language, you say it louder. We have three acts in ballet. Because I didn't know much about ballet. Can you hear us, Peter? So, and so I said, oh great, so what do I do? Just give you my stage act and yeah, we'll choose, you know, split it up into three 20-minute acts. I said, I got another idea. How about I write, we do like the beginning set and the end set with things people know. How about I go away and write 25 minutes of new music? And so they were pretty thrilled about that. And so, but I suddenly had a cold chill went over me and I grabbed my cell phone and went, Gordon, help! So we then spent the next, I don't know, few months coming up with some stuff, and this one is the very first one I think that we did just about, right? Well, it is the title, right? The Hummingbird in a Box, which is also a CD that you can get. Yeah, if you're not careful. Yeah. We sell something.
By gosh, don't accidentally buy music.
Yeah, I actually found out today that because of you guys out there and a few others, we are now Acoustic Classics, which I put out, came out like last Friday or something, is nowhere alike. I mean, I couldn't believe this. So, is number 20 on the Amazon.com chart. I know. The only charts that I'm on recently is the ones my doctors read to me. So. I don't do good. I cholesterol. Yeah. So cut this out, cut that out. Cut everything out now. Just don't eat anything. Anyway, it goes like this. This is Hummingbird in a Box.
company of it. Young boy amused, wise old granddad said, goes like this. Walk into a crowded room. stay and be my guest. But these moments end too soon. When it feels right, yes, it feels right, and it feels right, right now. Want you to hear me, want you to come near me. I want you to hear me. You want the front office, this is... No, we're on stage, love. You missed it, yeah. No, 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 this isn't Greg Allman. No, KC is tomorrow night, love. Why am I telling you this? For anyone, I don't know. But look, I'm in front of a whole... You want us to walk? Okay. We don't do requests usually, but I'll see what I can do. Okay. Thank you. Go away. So anyway, I have no idea who that was, they would like us to do a Beatles song. So today, we'd love to do a Beatles song because we lost the fifth Beatle recently. Mr. George Martin, an amazing producer, coupled with amazing band, obviously, and he did so many other Jeff Beck, America,
I got to work with him on a great album, not such a great film. But he had nothing to do with the film, just the music. But I did get to work with Sir George, and he was the nicest man you could ever wish to meet. He was like your uncle or something. Oh, it's okay. He tried that again, you know. And I just was so in. I couldn't sing the first time I went out there because George Martin. I can't sing, you know. But he made me feel so at ease. And we were working with the Beatles engineer as well, Jeff Emmerich. And the combination was phenomenal. So this I'm going to dedicate this to Sir George. To get here yesterday, and the second one came from Dallas to here, and I thought I was going to have the seat empty next to me, and then this very nice looking lady came walking on. I thought, and so as I'm getting up to let her in, she smacked me in the head with her watch. And even this morning, I could tell what time it was. It was just... But it's... I got a little makeup on me now, but it was painful. But I said, oh, it's okay. Are you here? Because I put two tickets at the door, you know? Sorry. Anyway, so Gordon, what is
the guitar you're playing?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
This guitar was left for me, given to me, by the late, great Jerry Reed. It was one of the guitars that he had sitting around his house, and any time he felt like playing the guitar, he would reach over and grab this guitar and play it. I've seen him play it before. And of course, you know, he didn't want to talk about guitars very much. I would ask him, you know, what kind of guitar did you play on Amos Moses? And he would say, I don't know, son, it was a piece of wood, you know. He didn't care, but it's what happens to that piece of wood when you put it in those hands. And it's the same thing that happens when you put this into the hands of this guy right here. This is the only person that I would ever bring this guitar out of the house and let play is this guy right here. So I need to hear him. It's pretty good. Jerry would be very proud.
Beautiful sounding guitar. This one was written while I was with the band Humble Pie, and it never actually made it to a Humble Pie session. It waited until my first solo record when it changed, and I had to write. I got inspired by something, and it was a gut string guitar, I believe, that I was playing at the time, and had to be very quiet because it was in an apartment, and everyone was asleep in the house, and so it turned out to be kind of a lullaby, and. It's something that I've always loved, this one, and it's got a special vibe for me. Anyway, it goes something like this. so loud. So there was an album in my lost period. It was similar to John Lennon's. I went out for a while into the wilderness. And thank you for the wilderness, yeah. And yes, and there's an album, I think it's called just Peter Frampton. Because I really was not inspired and couldn't come up with a title, so eponymous. I was playing a 12 string a lot in those days, and I wrote this one.
We don't learn from what's
So this next one is one that I think it was one of the early ones that we wrote. I believe it's on the Now record. Is that correct? Thank you. It's a song that we wrote this when both my parents were still with us, and so it's something that meant a lot then, but since they've passed, and if you know, if you've been there, you know, you will always miss them, and it's something that will never go away. And it's a kind of warm feeling inside me when I think about them, because I was very lucky to have incredible parents, very supportive, and only beat me on Thursdays. But when I was 11, I went to the school where ended up I made a family friend, and he was a family friend. My father was the head of the art department and taught David Jones for 4 years. And so my dad had a very special relationship with him, because I think there was a mutual admiration there, because dad was always one of the off-kilter people. You know, he was watching for them. He was a little off-kilter, you know what I mean? And, but he was brilliant right from the off. And but I wasn't interested in the art side. I was just interested, I'd seen Dave play in a band on the school steps at a fair we had to raise money for the school, and on the Saturday. So the next year I went to the school, and the first person I looked for was David Jones. And we hooked up, and my dad said, well, you guys bring your guitars to school, put them in my office. So we would do that. And that is, in fact, George Underwood, who did some of David's covers, was his dearest, closest friend. He's still a great friend of mine. And so we would sit on the art block stairs, and it had this all concrete, obviously, and had this amazing echo. So it was like, we would sing all these rock songs, American rock songs, and they taught me, you know, Buddy Holly stuff, that's who taught me some of the other ones, and also lots of other American artists that I'd never heard of. And so Dave and I were friends for his entire life, and he was always there. If I called him up and said, you know, what do you think about this? And he'd say, well, try that. He was always great, and he always never said, oh, you know, go away. he always helped me. And the greatest thing he ever did for me was that around the time he was about to make a new album in 86, I just finished the record and was going to go on tour. And he called me up and said, yeah, I've just heard your new album. Come and play some guitar for me, okay, on my new records. I said, oh, this is good. Thank you. Yeah, because we played on the same stage, but never at the same time, you know. And so I go to Switzerland, and we make the Never Let Me Down record. And then while we were there, we went out to dinner one night, and he said, would you ever think about coming on the road with me? Now, I said, let me think about that. Yes. And this was a dream of mine that we would one day, from that time I first saw him on the steps at school, you know, full circle, and that I would actually play with him. And so what he in fact did was, my career was not doing great then at all, and so he could have chosen any guitarist in the world, you know, and he chose me, and he, because he knew what I'd been through with the pop thing with T. teeny bopper thing, which sort of led me astray a little bit after Comes Alive came out. And he knew me, the musician. And so I thank him, I will always thank him for reintroducing me to the time for me. And you guys found it too. So I'm thinking about him again, as well as mom and dad. What do you do when you learn there's no tomorrow? You hold hands, sing songs, you live life till you're gone. This was our second album. It's called Town and Country, and it was on the Immediate label. And
we all came in to the rehearsal or the studio, and each one of us, we'd sit down and each one of us would play a song and say, oh, I like that one, I like that one. And this ended up being one of the songs on that album. And I originally thought that the guys were going to, I played it to them, and I thought everyone was going to man their electrics and we were going to rock it up. But they just all sat around me playing tablas and shakers and things, and they were probably smoking pot at the time. I think. There was a man playing a sitar and gone there. But it's okay. Is it legal here in this state?
Yes.
It's legal at your house, I know. Anyway, I didn't smoke then. So I played it and they were just all sitting, so we thought we'd record it like that. We had the most amazing recording experience because we had Andy Jones, who was Glenn Jones' younger brother, who did all the Zeppelin stuff and is responsible for that huge drum sound on When the Levee Breaks. And but Andy was, we lost him too, unfortunately, but he was an amazing engineer, and during the day, Humble Pie were recording, and then he would stay, and then Jack Bruce came in at like 6 o'clock, and he was recording Songs for a Tailor, that album, with Andy Jones. So I don't think Andy got much sleep when we were making that album. But anyway.
Yeah. I can't afford to pay. It's do or die.
Steve Marriott, who always came up with a good idea, so it was great for that. And he said, why don't we try Heartbeat, but we'll do it in, you know, three of us all sing, Greg, myself, and Steve, and put some harmonies on it and see how we do. So this is what it is. We're going to do it.
We're going to do it right now.
Thank you.
back and sing to me love stories.
So that's what we're going to do right now, and this is a song that, I'll tell you a couple quick things about it. It was, it's probably the reason why I got to work with him in the first place, because, you know, they went to him to tell him, you know, they told him my name, you know, probably where I grew up, my catalog of songs, won a Grammy for Song of the Year in 97 for his Kenneth Packer song, and they had to tell him my life story to get him to, you know, be interested in working with me. They came to me and they said, Peter Frampton. So that's why we got together the first time. And so we're going to do that song right now. And I am going to also have a dedication here. This is, you know, we lost a producer in George Martin today. And so I'm going to dedicate this to another producer that it happens to be the day, 25 years ago today, that the one who produced me, my two brothers, my mother, Linda, passed away. So I'm going to do, she never got to hear this song. So I'm going to do this song now for her. And you and I have been doing this since October. Thank you.
glad that I didn't know they were going to have that song tonight. So, that's an amazing song. Thank you.
Gee, do you have any amazing songs, Peter?
Yeah.
fun. You having fun? Me too. On the Acoustic Classics CD that's out, I made a list of the ones that I, well, the last one we did, obviously, I wanted to do that one, and a bunch of other ones. And but when it came to Do You Feel, I thought, I don't think I can do that with acoustic. No. So anyway, I thought what I was going to do, I was going to be a real tease, and I was just going to have, in between each track, and in echo, like way back, and like the ghost of Do You Feel. And so then I thought, I cannot do this. I gotta. So I went into this, my studio, and I tried the intro, and then I put, instead of, obviously there's a keyboard plays the harmony with me in the intro, and so I got another guitar and learned the keyboard part, and played it, and I came back in this control room, and it made me smile. So I thought, maybe there's hope for this song. And on this record, anyway. So I went back and I did the whole thing, and I'm really glad I did. So, thank you. blue tail never failed. Must have been a dream, I don't believe where I've been. Thank you so much. No, I always go into this rap here that even though Smoking was my favorite, I have to say, was my favorite Humble Pie album, I'm not on that one. So I had left the album before, the Rock in the Fillmore was me. And I mixed that one and everything. But so when people shout out 30 Days in the Hall, it's like, I love that song, but I don't want that one. I wish I was on that one. But anyway, Clem did a great job on that one. Okay, so this one is a mashup, I think is the term these days, of two songs. And one of them is Breaking All the Rules, which was on the Breaking All the Rules album. Which none of you have. But it's just been reissued on vinyl. It is actually. And then the other one is one that we wrote together with Wayne Kirkpatrick for Almost Famous Movie, which my dear friend Cameron Crowe directed. Let's hear it for all those things. That was one of the...
It's almost here.
That's all. And so let's see if we can spot where it changes over. Good luck, so here we go. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
interesting. This keyboard has been with me for absolutely years, and I don't know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We have a DVD that was done in The DVD was live in Detroit. In the band at the time was a dear brother musician, Bob Mayo. And he always used to play this keyboard. And I haven't played it since, and got it out for this tour. And so let's see what happens when I do this.